Greetings to you, oh beautiful friends. It is I, D. Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. And I've said it before, and it might be annoying. It might feel like I'm teasing you. I'm not. But my God, have I got the coolest secret to tell you guys, which I can't tell you. I can't tell you for a long time, possibly. There's good secrets and there are bad secrets. This is a good secret. Potentially the best secret that I've ever had. Man, for a yappy, bearded person. I don't know why I had to throw the beard thing in. There is no correlation between pubic hair manifestation and the ability or inability to keep secrets. Well, actually, to be honest, I haven't done the study. I don't know if this kind of study exists. I don't know if anybody has done a measurement of pubic hair on a variety of bodies and then tested to see if there's any correlation between people who have facial hair and who can keep a secret and who can't keep a secret. You know, I don't know. Someone should do that study. I'm sure there's a huge interest in that. I mean, shit, if we could actually find out that there's some correlation one way or the other between people who have beards and people who don't have beards, people who have shaved their pubes down below and people who haven't shaved their pubes down below, and people who can keep secrets or people who can't keep secrets, this would revolutionize so many various industries and also create some pretty intense ethical dilemmas when it came to the interview process for jobs that involve the ability to keep secrets. Because you'd have to sit across from the person and look them right in the eye and say, listen, do you have pubic hair? Speaking of pubes, did you know that crab lice are going extinct? Let me look that up. I'm pretty sure this is true. Let me look this up. Crab lice going extinct. Going instinct. The instinct of a crab lice. I wonder if crab lice, if there's like a pubic louse that brags to his friends that he's got really good instincts. Okay. See, this is just something I heard. This is from Wired.com, September 29, 2014. It says, every few years an alarm is raised. Habitat loss puts this species at risk. Pubic grooming has led to a severe depletion of crab louse populations, an environmental disaster in the making for the species, said one entomologist, who also happens to work for a company that specializes in ectoparasite control. Shit, man. This actually reminds me of a rather dire thing that an Uber driver once said to me, which is that if you're making umbrellas, you need it to rain. And he was talking about weapons manufacturers, which is really creepy. You know, if you're making weapons, you need there to be war. Similarly, if you're making crab lice poison, you need there to be crabs. You don't want it completely end all crab lice, all pubic lice on the planet. You want there to be pubic lice. You want there to be at least enough so that people keep buying your medicine. And suddenly this cultural apocalypse has happened where people are shaving their pubes, probably because of porn, because you look at porn and somebody's shaving their bush and you're like, oh, I should shave mine. And just think of the disappointment of the pubic louse, who, by the way, your pubic lice are rooting for you. They want you to make contact. They want you to make love. They're probably down there right now, if you've got them, talking to each other like, God, he just needs to understand that, like, it's not about making tons of money so much as finding out that there's like an infinite reservoir of love in his heart. You know, he's trying to build the house from the top down. He wants to have all this surface level shit because he thinks it's going to draw a mate, and maybe it will, but the mate it's going to draw is definitely going to have a shaved bush, and we're screwed. We're literally screwed. There's nowhere to spread. We're overpopulating. That's so weird. Crab lice want you to have sex in the same way UFO enthusiasts want a mothership to come down to Earth and beam them up to take them to some other place. Huh, I never realized that. There's actually a UFO pubic lice connection. Anyway, the point is I have a secret, a good secret, not a bad secret. Bad secret is you've got crabs. That's a bad secret. That's a heavy secret to carry around, that you've got a habitat of lice living in your pubic hair. I mean, you're not going to put that in your Tinder profile. You're not going to write down, I'm the Johnny Appleseed of lice, necessarily. But they're good secrets, and I've got a good one. I can't talk about it, though, unfortunately. But In a weird way, this podcast, this episode is kind of about secrets because we're interviewing Maja Da'u, the Witch of the Dawn. And as the occult has been described to me, it means hidden in plain sight. It's not evil. It's not bad, even though many of us who've been indoctrinated or conditioned by the satanic panic style movies, Rosemary's Baby, The Omen, so many others that portray witchcraft, sorcery, occultism as being something practiced by people who want to eat your children. When we hear the term occult, we can get a little nervous, like, what the fuck is that? But really, I think it's a beautiful term. It just means there are things around you that are hidden in plain sight by people who have a very good secret. You know, the gospel. I've heard that means good news. You know, so similarly, the occult is a thing that's hidden right in front of you, right in plain sight, just waiting for you to enjoy finding it, which is like really a real, it's fun. You know, it's like an Easter egg hunt, so to speak, you know? Like, who the fuck would ever, first of all, honestly, I never like Easter egg hunts. They freak me out. I don't like them. Kids get competitive. The eggs break. It's weird. You know, if only someone had sat down with me and like, you know that the Easter egg is actually connected to Hecate, the goddess of magic. And that this is a kind of pagan ritual that we're doing here that really doesn't have much to do with the resurrection of Christ. I would have been way more into it. But yeah, I don't like Easter egg hunts. And I used to like, you know, you hard boil the eggs and you paint them and you're I guess you're supposed to enjoy it. I never liked it. What I ended up doing was like taking the eggs to the top of my driveway and rolling them down the driveway for no reason, just watching the break and just hard-boiled eggs scatter all along the black asphalt of my poor grandmother's driveway. We were living with my grandmother at the time. And the stink that came from that eggpocalypse over the next few weeks was just unbearable. And they were mad at me. And we tried hosing it down, but it didn't work. Like, the thing just smelled horrible. But to get back to the point, you know, there's Easter eggs among us right now that have been left there by people who sometimes call themselves witches, sorcerers, magicians, little symbols, signs, wards, things there for you to see that... that you have to find out for yourself. And that's how I've come to understand the occult. You know, it's not a missionary style thing. You have to find it on your own. So today's podcast is a conversation with someone who teaches the occult, who teaches magic, who teaches Western esotericism, and who is really good at conveying this great secret without giving anything away at all. So if you're interested in the occult, if you're interested in witchcraft, if you're interested in any of these things, then wow, this is a fantastic episode for you. And as far as my secret goes, well, maybe we can start talking about it in the same way the atomic scientists talk about the doomsday clock. You know that clock that tells us how close we are to a nuclear apocalypse? You know that saying, like, we're 3 seconds from midnight, right? That's how I'll start talking about the secret. Right now, we're 5 seconds from midnight, but soon it's going to happen. In the meantime, I just got to keep my secret. You know, there will be an eschatological moment, an apocalyptic moment. You know, the apocalypse actually means lifting of the veil, where I reveal what this great secret is. But until then, I got to keep my bearded, pubic, lice-infested mouth shut. As much as I would like to spread this good news, I can't.
When you hear my secret, your brain is going to spray, exploding on the strangers that you're with on the subway. They'll scream and they'll go running, but you will not care. because your brains are splattered on someone else's hair. Bits of your brain will be carried by rats to the Rat King. He'll put it in the skull of his mummified queen, and you will live forever as royalty. All thanks to my secret.
I know what you're thinking. With such a beautiful voice, why did you not go into music? The truth is, I'm not allowed to sing in 37 states in this country. So the only place that still lets me sing is California. Thank God. Friends, we have a great podcast for you. We're going to jump right into it. But first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Simple Contacts. My friends, Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your brand of contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. You need to renew your prescription? Take the 5-minute Simple Contacts vision test online. It'll be reviewed by a licensed doctor. You receive a renewed prescription and reorder your contacts. All you need is your current contacts, an internet connection, and 10 feet of space. Even if you're totally out of contacts, they've got an option for you too. And if you have an unexpired prescription, just upload a photo of your doctor's information and order your lenses. I have perfect vision. I am known in the Air Force as Laser Eye. That's one of the many names that they use for me. In fact, right now I am flying my own jet far above Australia as I record this. So I got great vision. I don't need contacts. I don't need glasses. But my wife, who spent 2 years in Egypt as an Egyptologist, gazed into the forbidden tome of Nurmulq and blasted her eyes. And now she needs contacts. So we use Simple Contacts to make sure that it works. And here's how it works. Using your phone or computer, you take the Simple Contacts vision test in 5 minutes from literally anywhere. You can do it anywhere. I watched her do it in my podcast studio from her laptop. A real doctor reviews your test in 24 hours, writes you a new prescription, and boom, a fresh supply of your brand of lenses is on the way to your door. No more appointments, no more waiting rooms, no more overpaying. Simple Contacts brings the doctor office to wherever you are, whenever you need it. Sweet friends, this is the vision care of the future. Actually, it's the vision care of right now. Simple Contacts offers every brand of lenses and their prices are unbeatable. The prescription is just $20. The contact lens prices are so low and shipping is free. Best of all, my listeners get $20 off their first Simple Contacts order. To save $20 on your lenses, just go to simplecontacts.com/Duncan20. That's simplecontacts.com/Duncan20 or enter the code Duncan20 at checkout. I want to mention that this isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam. You still need those occasionally. Your sweet, precious, beautiful eyes, they're going to see so many things. They're going to see your first child. They're going to see an alien land in front of you. They're going to see the splitting open of the time-space continuum and the reemergence of Lord Hethnorg, the leader of the galactic fleet. And so you need to take care of them. You still got to get your periodic full eye health exams, and you need those occasionally. But Simple Contacts is the most convenient way to renew a prescription and reorder your contacts if your vision hasn't changed. Again, check out Simple Contacts and get $20 off by going to simplecontacts.com/Duncan20 or just enter Duncan20 at checkout. Give it a try. My wife continues to use Simple Contacts, and I hope you will too. Thanks, Simple Contacts. Dear sweet darling friends, thank you so much to my Patreon subscribers for supporting the DTFH. If you want to go deeper into the DTFH and swim down in the inner slimy quadrants of the swirling mechanoid discs that make up the inner rectangular pulsating part of the pyramid that is the DTFH. In other words, if you want to get into the inner room and open up the Codex of Truth, all you got to do is go to patreon.com/DTFH and subscribe. You will have early access to episodes of the DTFH. There's also access to our Discord server. And once a month, I do a long rambling thingamajiggy, an opening monologue, basically. So you get commercial free episodes, you get extra content, but most importantly, you become my patron, my master, my queen, my king. You push my face into the slime, and I lick your boot and thank you every time you spank my naughty, naughty little body. Also, we've got lots of new t-shirts and swag over at DuncanTrussell.com. Just click on the shop. All right, enough shillery, damn it. Let's dive into this beautiful episode of the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Please, everyone, prepare yourselves, open your minds, and welcome back to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. Somebody who is, for lack of a better word, the real deal. The two times in my life I've gotten to hang out with Maja have been permanently transformative. She's a teacher. She gifted me with a wonderful tarot deck that she's created called the White Witch Tarot. If you happen to live in Los Angeles, she often teaches classes. And she does various forms of spiritual work. If you're interested, you can find her by going to www.witchofthedawn.com. Now, everyone, please send as much love as you possibly can up into the moon and let it bounce off of the moon into the eyes, skin, hair, and etheric body of today's wonderful guest, Maja Daou. Maja, welcome back to the DTFH. So wonderful to see you. It's been too long.
It's been a while. Thanks, Duncan.
I am really excited about your upcoming book.
Thank you.
A Witch's Bestiary. And it helped me create my first question for you. We have a child on the way, and I was chatting with my wife about the Santa Claus problem.
Yes. I ran into that problem. Head on.
What are we going to do? Do we tell him there is a Santa Claus? And I was saying, well, maybe we could figure out a way to explain to him that though in this dimension, there is no physical Santa Claus.
Right.
There's a liminal realm of stories within.
As an archetype.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And your book seems, I was thinking, does it have a similar bend to it?
You're so right on. It's very much looking at, like, the point isn't even if they're real. The point is that the human mind keeps making them real every time we think about them.
Right.
So they're like a thought form.
Right.
Yeah.
And in this case, when you say they, you're talking about mythological creatures.
Correct.
What are some of these beasts?
So like unicorns or dragons. Well, dragons actually are real. So that's like a whole nother story.
Real in the sense of like you think there's dragons living on planet Earth, or real in the sense they were here?
There are dragons on planet Earth. They are not what people think they are, though. They're electrical. They're like these electricity things that look kind of like sperm. I don't know how else to describe them. But they're these, you can see them in the sky when you stare without blinking. But then also there are, like, that's what the Chinese called dragons. So it was like a chi kind of clump.
Okay.
It's not like, you know how they would draw them all serpent-y?
Yes.
Like they really look like spermy things. And you can actually visually see them in the sky. My shaman teacher, Kelvin DeWolf, showed me the technique. And indigenous people see them as well.
What's the technique?
It's really hard. You have to stare at one spot that you choose, like on the horizon, and you can't blink your eyes and you can't move your eyes for like a long, long time. So most people, if you try to do it, like you're pretty good, you're pretty solid. Like even we can have a conversation and you're not all over the place.
Right.
But a lot of people, they can't hold their gaze.
Sure.
You know, so it's like a lot of hypnotism techniques too. Yeah. But it's a Taoist technique of staring, and the Egyptians would do it also, where you don't break your gaze. Right. You keep it and you hold it for like a few hours. It took a lot of training because your eyes like water like crazy. Like you look like you're crying and everything. Yeah. But it's like an energetic, like a real electrons or something. Maybe it's related to lightning. I don't know. But you can see it. Like it's not like woo. You can actually see it with your bare eyeballs. Right.
How many of them are out there?
Oh, my God. Like millions, a lot of them, and they can wriggle into things. So they describe it like chi or energy or something, right?
How big are they?
It's hard to say because I see them in the sky, right? So I don't know, like, if, like, proportionally what that is. They get attracted to people, too, which I guess, like, lightning does as well.
Oh,
it's some kind of electromagnetic thing.
Wow.
It's some kind of electromagnetic thing that you can see with your eyeballs when you learn how to look.
This reminds me of something I read that I found to be really cool and kind of sad regarding photons, which is that photons are kind of brewed in the core of the sun for a really long time.
That's awesome.
And the sun, when a photon comes out of the sun, it's been in there for a long
time. It's old.
What's that?
It's old.
It's older. I think older than the Earth.
Yeah.
And I'm not
maybe as old as the universe.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And that little photon goes zinging out and our eyes eat it. When it comes into our eyes,
we eat light.
Yes.
That's part of what this technique does. And like sun gazing, I don't know if you've heard of that too.
Terrified of it. It seems like you go blind, right?
You can only do it, like, please don't try to do this, people. Like it's a technique you can only do for like 20 minutes. When the sun rises and when it sets. Otherwise, it's dangeroso, right?
Yeah.
It's not to be done at other times. But you're eating the light, essentially, by not blinking, not closing your eyes. So it collects all of this light. Because they did this study and shows that when you blink, your consciousness resets, right? So it creates like a stutter.
Cool.
Like a flip in the movie, how if you slow it down, you can see the tracks.
Yes. Now I'm afraid to blink.
If you don't blink, you can see like kind of four-dimensionally. Okay.
Wow.
So, you know, if you were to think of you moving through space time, you wouldn't look like how you look now. You would look like a snake.
Yes.
Right. Sure. A lot of people talk about this. Yes. Right. But you can actually see that with your bare eyeballs when you do these specific techniques.
Whoa.
Right? But they're very difficult to do. That's
right.
Why people don't do them.
Wow.
Right? Like my teacher, he is indigenous, so he gets the information, number one, from his lineage, but also like he just is different than other people.
Yeah.
Right? And then when I train with him, I kind of pick it up off of him by being next to him, if that makes sense. You know how like when you hang out with friends for a while, you guys start talking the same?
Yes.
So just being in proximity, I think, to people that have that perception ability, you can see it easier.
Sure.
But I saw, like, you can see things through space and time.
Gotcha.
When you practice not blinking and not, like, shutting your consciousness down.
Wow.
Yeah. So we do this one thing where we don't sleep for, like, 5 days during the solstice. So you don't stop your consciousness stream, which,
gotcha.
Again, that takes, like, a lot of training, and I had to do a lot of things. So don't just, like, not sleep without training, because you'll mess yourself up, right? Some people will have hallucinations.
Well, this was actually, I was interviewing Jack Kornfield.
Oh, cool.
With Pete Holmes, and Pete Holmes asked him, what's, like, the weirdest thing?
Yeah.
And Kornfield said his teacher told him to refrain from sleeping. Because he was
a Zen dude. Was his teacher Zen?
It wasn't Zen. This was in, it was Ajahn Chah. I think it was in like Cambodia. So it wasn't Zen Buddhism. It was maybe, it wasn't Zen. It was Vipassana,
okay.
But I don't know. So I don't, I'm not exactly sure of the lineage, but one, like he was doing a year of not talking. And in the midst of that, his teacher
told him, try not sleeping for a while. And then he had a full out. He came out of his body and stood on the.
You come out of space time. Like, it's not a joke. Like I said, I saw everything. Like, there was no time. So everything was connected. Like, people were literally these serpent-y things. Yes. Kind of like in Donnie Darko when that thing comes out of his chest, you know? Mm-hmm. Which I guess was, like, his intention. But, like, you can see, and when you see yourself in that kind of totality, oh, boy, like.
It's pretty intense to deal with karma, right?
Totally.
I saw there's a Instagram artist I follow called, I think, Insetigris, and he does drawings of this thing that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Which I've seen, you know, from psychedelics.
Yes.
And the way I've seen it is the snake thing that you're talking about is like frames pushing out.
It's like Nude Descending a Staircase by Picasso. Do you know that painting?
No, I'll pull it up right now. Let me look at it.
It's got like a stutter and he moves fluidly. It's the perfect example of what I'm talking about done in a painting.
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Right?
Yeah,
that's it, right?
That's totally it.
That's what it is. Isn't that? That's real.
Crazy.
You can see it with your eyeballs.
Wow. Yeah, that is really fascinating to me that this other completely alternate universe exists. I guess you're looking at, what would you call that sort of, I don't know, snaking, framing, caterpillary thing?
It's like another dimension. So I maybe like it's best to describe it dimensionally because it's literally like you see through another kind of level or something. Like we just see 3D, right? Yes. In these kind of stuttered, blinky thingies that we go in and out of.
Yes.
When we sleep. And then after that experience, I started having crazy lucid dreams, like nuts ones where I would break through these levels, like full Inception style.
Wow.
Like I had one last night. I have these all the time, but so just like quickie, basically I came lucid in the dream and I was in a kitchen and there was a friend of mine from high school in the kitchen. And I was like, there's no way you would be here right now. Like, I haven't seen you in so long. And I was like, you're not you. Like, that was what I said. I was like, you're not you. And I was like, you're my memory of you.
Wow.
And then I said, if you're real, you won't care if I do this. And then I punched him in the face.
Yeah.
And when I punched him in the face, he turned into black and everything went into this like galaxy. Wow. And it like popped the whole reality of the dream into this big thing because I knew that I was dreaming.
Wow.
And then I like woke up like super shocky style. But it'll like when you kind of maintain your consciousness like that, you start to get awareness in your dreams more. So you get like more lucid.
That thing you just described reminds me of a story someone told me about their ayahuasca shaman and how he had a drum. And, you know, they were the oddity of this particular sacrament is that people see the same thing together.
That's the thing.
Yeah, that's what's odd. And he was, so they were sort of in this domed space together. And then with his drum, he's opening, he's doing just what you said with a punch, but he's doing it to this space.
Whoa.
It's like pushing it open.
Yeah.
So that there, and there's this other thing outside of it, this sort of layered, I don't know what you would call it. It's like an, I don't know what you would call it. Is this the astral plane that you're talking about? When you have lucid dreams, are you
right? What is that like to describe it locationally?
Yes.
The best kind of word I can think is like dimensionality, right? I don't know how else, like what is it? But other people all go there and they'll see like the same things, like with the dome thing you're talking about. So like the first time I went into virtual reality, have you ever been in VR?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it has this, it's like the Truman Show, right? And I was like, oh my God, whoever made virtual reality has totally done drugs.
Yes.
And sure enough, he totally did. And that is like what you're saying, you guys saw that dome world is what this guy tried to replicate. So if you want to see what we're talking about, you can just go into like a VR realm.
Are you familiar with this fellow, Jaron Lanier? Have you ever heard of him?
Uh-uh.
He's the guy who coined the term VR, and he's got a great new book out called The Dawn of the New Everything.
It's
amazing.
Yeah.
But he discusses this very phenomena that you're talking about in a different way. He says that in virtual reality space, And this kind of brings us to what we were talking about, unfortunately, before we started recording.
Yeah.
In virtual reality space, you look down and your body is whatever the body is designed by whoever.
The avatar.
The avatar. But should you be in a VR simulation where you have no body, you still have this sense of awareness.
Yeah.
And so in a way, virtual reality is sort of replicating this thing that many
sentience.
Of us... Sentience minus form.
Ooh, that's good.
And when you were discussing the Bushido,
yeah.
I wonder if you could just say that again, what you were talking about, the Bushido warrior and
yeah.
finding this like inner... core among the turbulence.
Yes. So a lot of the training I do is a little similar, where in Bushido, the samurai would keep and hold their center no matter what was happening around them. And so a lot of Buddhists like call it like finding the hub of the wheel, as opposed to being like one of the spokes and thrown off the center. Yeah. But they could be in the middle of this crazy battle with everybody dying and being chopped to bits around them. And in the center, they're still. They don't ever lose themselves, no matter what kind of chaos swirls around them. So it's like being a star in outer space, right? Yeah. Where you have the center of your sentience that remains regardless of the changes, right? Like you said, of shape or form that you're occupying.
That's
so
it.
That goes like inter-life kind of thing, I guess, would be... like how you would go through, like if you think we are just these temporary forms or vessels that our sentience is occupying, right? Like all Egyptian style, where we just kind of jump ship and then hop into the next thing, right? That would make sense.
Yeah.
That it's, but VR would very much kind of double that.
Sure.
Or give you an experience of it.
It's like a tool. Yeah. It's a way to,
yeah.
so, you know, you take, this is one of Ram Dass's, the story of like Ram Dass, one big chapter, or I guess you could say one turn in his story, is Tim Leary has given him, I think, synthetic psilocybin.
Yeah.
He goes and sits on a couch during a party. He's alone. He's sitting on a couch. And essentially, he begins to see... representations of the various elements of his identity, the Harvard professor, and then that thing vanishes. And then I think it's his material possessions, and those things vanish. And then he's like realizing, wow, I'm seeing this sort of like dissolution of my identity. And then he looks down and his body begins to vanish.
So good.
And then, and you know, all the other stuff, he's like, I could do without that, but wait a minute, my body. And then that's gone. And now
that's what? Rough to lose your body.
To lose your body.
That's a biggie.
So this identification with a body is a blindfold, you could say, to this sort of what appears to be a transcendent sentience that doesn't really seem to have any kind of.
You can get there. Like I had these disassociative moments where you can really see your mannequin or like, you know, like your meat suit as like not me. And I was like looking at people and I was like, whoa, humans, like they're just all humans. Like if you would see all these mallard ducks, right? So like every mallard duck looks the same. Do you think that mallard duck like identifies its essence with that form it is, which is like all these other ones? Like it seems so silly that people totally identify with their, you know, vessel they're in, to me, when you look at it kind of like in this larger scope. So it's true, like when you lose that, not that we aren't this thing moving around, because we totally are doing it right now, right?
Yeah.
But that people hold on to that so tightly without thinking maybe you could be something without that.
Right. And what would you call that thing? The thing without that?
I think sentience is a good way. The Egyptians describe it as like your ka, right? So they show it like a bird that kind of sits on you like you're a tree.
Yeah.
And there's a bird on you. And then when time's up, the bird just goes and flies somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? Like it's a sojourner at a hotel.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. But what is that thing? That's really what we really are.
Right.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
So how would you like really describe that in a word?
Soul?
I guess, yeah, like a spirit or a soul, right? Your essence, you're kind of like your diamond.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
But is that, this is a thing I run into sometimes when I talk with people who have been really diving deep into psychedelics or meditation for that matter, is that sometimes they hit upon something that can be really quite horrifying to them, which is that in the same way Ram Dass looks down and his body is dissolved.
Yeah, because that's a death experience.
A death experience. And the death experience on psychedelics is usually, if you can overcome the fear of death, it's like that's how you know it's working.
Exactly.
But then there's another death that can happen on psychedelics, which is the thing that is like, oh, wow, I died. Now look at how cool all this is. That thing begins to dissolve.
Yeah.
Which is, and then you start running into this really curious, potentially.
The abyss.
Yes.
Yeah.
That.
The abyss is pretty gnarly.
The abyss.
The abyss.
Where even the thing that you thought was, oh, this is the I am.
It's too much. That's where you go crazy. That's like some Cthulhu ass shit. Yeah.
The abyss.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, well, you know, actually, what you are is that whole sentience, you know, the whole bird thing. Well, the bird itself is just another ribbon wrapped around nothing.
Ribbon. It is like a ribbon.
Yeah. It's like ribbons or something.
Like hairs is kind of how I saw it once, right? All coming off this larger thing.
Yeah.
Or feathers even, kind of.
Oh, wow.
So it's like that fractal thing where they're just these strings on a bigger string.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if you ever saw that picture of Lanakia, the way they call it, of like our galaxy in the universe.
No.
It looks like this big, like, it's like a Quetzalcoatl looking birdie thing with like these hairish sort of feathers coming off it. Like, I think that's what they were talking about.
Whoa.
But then your like little thing is only like a little thing of that great big thing.
Right.
So then you like lose everything when you kind of have those things,
yes,
right? And it's hard to integrate.
It's hard to let go.
Yeah.
We are stuck. At least me, like any, the great devastating ego blow that comes whenever I'm enjoying a nice strong cup of mint tea is when I've suddenly, you know, find myself at that place where it's like, no, you see, you still, even in here in this realm where you think you have
an identity,
you're still here, you're still clinging to some you're still holding
the clinging
and it's like it, whenever I hit that point, I'm still can't let go. What are you able to let go during?
I have
meditation?
Like little moments, but then it's fleeting, right? So I've had, I think, like three big let goes where everything was like, whoosh,
yeah,
right? And then it makes you not ever want to do it again. And it took me like a month to recover from that.
Wow.
Just, you know, because then you're like, it's hard to integrate those experiences because it's like too big, right? So then you have to just do regular stuff a lot.
Right.
You know, like really ground yourself out and do really like earth stuff.
Yeah.
And just eat good food.
Right.
You know, and like take a bath.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then just get back to regular. But I had three, but letting go, it's really it's not even you personally, but it's your primal animal that doesn't want to die. So it's not even you. It's like life force that you have to fight in order to let go.
Yeah.
So it's like, my teacher describes it like this dinosaur. So when he gets into his, it's like a dinosaur. Whoa. That will fight to the death before it's going to die.
Yeah.
It's really your will to live.
Yeah.
So if you have a strong will to live, which I'm like kind of an animal chick, you know, so I can fight, like I'll do it. Like, you know, what is it going to take if I got to that place? I'm not like, I'll just lay down and take it. That's not who I am. So if you have a strong will to live, that let go is going to be real rough. It's like those MMA guys that get punched out and then they're still like fighting.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
That's their will to live.
Wow.
And that's their corporeal, like some people's biology is just like stronger in that will.
Yeah. That's right? It.
So when you have that will, that's rough to drop it, because your whole system is going to be like, nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're staying.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is, you know, I just saw this quote and, you know, I'm just like, my mind's mush. So I never remember these damn people, because they all have cool names like Chuang Tse.
Yeah.
You know, like there's, this is a Taoist, I think a Taoist mystic. And the quote was something along the lines of, you know, people are so afraid to let go into the emptiness. I'm totally screwing this up. Sorry, Chuang Tse, or what? Forgive me. People are so afraid to let go of the emptiness, but they don't realize the thing that's afraid to let go is the emptiness. And yeah. That, oh man.
It's like,
oh fuck, I can't even, you think you can let go? You've already, there's nothing to let
there's
go.
There's nothing
of.
Even there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
How could there be a right. thing? It's like a trick.
Yeah.
Right? When I had the let goes, I realized, I was like, oh my God, what a joke. Like my big thing after having those experiences, yeah. I was like, this is like a sham.
Yeah.
It's like a sham.
Yeah.
Right? And you come into that and it's like hilarious.
Yeah.
After you get through the terror part, yeah. It's like, what is this? It's like, it was like everything looked like a theater. Like yeah. It was like a theater set.
Right.
Or something.
That's right.
Like a constructed thing.
Yeah.
That I could see through, like a sham.
Yeah. And so, but then, sure as shit, you're back in the meat suit.
Correct.
And now what? And this is...
What do you do with that?
What do you do here? You realize, okay, oh man, this thing doesn't last that long at all.
Yep.
I'm here for a flickering of a gnat's eye.
Yeah.
And now I guess I'll go take a bath.
Eat some food.
Eat some food. But, you know, people, yeah. I think this is where some people can really run into some difficulty.
Yes.
With reintegration, because...
They don't ground back in.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of, you know, I was sitting eating with my wife the other day and, like, you know, eavesdropping on a conversation that was happening at the table next to me. And this woman was saying, well, my mother, you know, she started to take ayahuasca and she wants me to do it. And I'm like, Mom, you want me to do drugs? And I don't. And she's like, you know, my mom, she said she was sitting at the office and then suddenly she saw that things around her were breathing. I mean, she was having some kind of ayahuasca flashback or wow. something. And I was thinking, like, well, shit. Your mom is actually seeing, maybe for the first time, what the universe...
Life. It's alive.
Yeah.
That breathing is life itself.
Yeah.
It's not stagnant.
Yeah. And then I'm thinking, like, man, this is really cool because we are in a psychedelic revolution to the point where someone's mom is telling them to take ayahuasca. And then I'm thinking, like, fuck. But no one's there to tell her mom. That's it's not you're having a flashback. It's that you're witnessing.
There's no context or training. Yeah, man. That's why I'm so into, like, my teacher and grateful for him, is that context and knowing that is provided through it. Like, I mean, I'm not going to talk trash and everything is wonderful, but I hear of so many people going to these retreats and they are guided not for shit. And they're like dosed and left alone. And I'm like, that was not my experience. Like, you do techniques and you have to train so hardcore before even any of that happens. And it's all will and discipline based. So right. for like the stuff I do, it's hard work. Like yeah. there's no just like dose them and stick them in the dark. Right. I guess that is a way to do it, but I do think that decreases integration factor. Well, and I'm sure. also a big fan of Jeffrey Cripple's work with the microdosing stuff,
sure. okay.
you know?
Yeah.
And I feel like too many people just want some kind of experience and then they have no knowledge or context to either scholarly or physically to place that into. And then right. it causes them these schisms to integrate.
That's it.
Yeah.
yeah. And this feels like the collision, like one of the problems right now feels like that thing you're saying, people want to have these experiences.
Yeah.
So there's this sort of instinctual sense in a lot of people that they need something that they're not
getting.
Which
is true.
Yes, that's true.
So they need spirit food. It's nourishment for their
yeah,
spirit.
Yeah. yeah. And people right now, people are feeling it so deeply.
Yeah.
And so and here are psychedelics, which is a way, and they sense, oh, this is a way to get the food.
Correct.
But there's no framework now. So many people don't have the framework anymore. There used to be a framework, for better or for worse,
yeah,
which was, you know, organized. There was religion. There was organized religion. There was this real sense that this is actually real. Now all that's been, people have like gotten so fixated on the matter form.
They're lucky if they've read a Carlos Castaneda book now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like that's how far removed it's gotten. No offense to everybody, like, yeah, do like have the experience, it's great. That's, and now there's so much more accessible.
Yeah.
Right, even being made legal, like I think there's a thing for psilocybin to get made legal now, and MDMA too, I think.
Yeah,
too is
right.
Coming up to that thing, so people will be having more access to these. But man, when they break out of the dome and they start to have those experiences, like, their doctor is not going to be able to tell them what's happening.
Nope.
And most of the indigenous people that we've now, like, murdered all of them, that are the ones that do have knowledge and gnosis in these areas, like, we're screwing ourselves by continuing to victimize all the people that actually hold the real truth, and we're focusing on the drug.
Yeah.
So a lot of, if I could say like one thing about it, support these humans that have actually so integrated this into their whole being, and stop just going to take the drugs.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah. Right.
It's better.
Yeah. Right.
Support those indigenous people who are holding it in their whole, like, flesh and blood as beings and live there. You can't get that from dosing yourself with anything.
How do you support those people? What's...
A lot of them are trying to spread the teachings. Like, my teacher's trying really hard to teach people this stuff. It's ironic because we'll have, like, some white people just take it, right? And then they present it as their own L.A. problems.
Yes.
But I'm like, wow, really? You're just going to steal from a Native American?
Oh, you're talking about the thing. Actually, I did a commercial on this podcast as a parody of that thing. Shaman Vinny Dorito.
Oh, my God.
Walking ayahuasca towards the Silver Lake.
Yeah,
but,
man.
Like, you run into this thing where people make contact. And they do it. They do it for a period of a few months,
and
suddenly now they've become, they've elevated themselves to the. It's like somebody getting their appendix removed and then becoming a surgeon. It's
so good,
you know.
Yes.
And it's
rampant.
Yeah. It's
support who showed you though.
Yeah.
Like, you can have that experience and grow as an individual. It's not to negate the reality of people that really get powers from those experiences, because that's true too. Like, you learn from that and then you become it. But, like, you can't just, you know, cut and run, like, take the meat and make for the door. Like, come on, like, give them support. Like, if they have an organization, or maybe they have a nonprofit, or maybe you can support their reservation, or you can just, like, help pass laws that will protect their land, or, you know, do real things that will assist these individuals that are holding that space for everyone, or try to, like, not have their land taken by the government to mine for resources.
Right?
Like, just stuff like that that could actually help support the individuals that they're getting it from.
That's right.
Right? Because that's it, the plant will confer it to you through the consciousness, but that's not going to show you what it means to be human.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were saying, which is that when you get into the presence of some of these people, suddenly you find, in the same way that if I'm around, like, you know, some of my friends who are comedians, they're way funnier than me. I get real
impossible.
I can become very I become way funnier around them.
Right? You know, that's true.
Suddenly I'm funnier.
Yeah.
And
you know, start to vibe off their vibe.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then if I'm around, like, you know, Ram Dass, when I get into his field, then everything, then it's like that thing you were talking about when you finally let go and you're like, oh, what was I afraid of?
You feel peace.
Yeah, that. And so these people that you're talking about, your teacher and all the others, they're holding a space.
Correct.
That they've cultivated.
It's a cultivation, like they're gardeners.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's easy. So easy to get into their presence and then suddenly imagine that you are like that now. Which is a real, we all hit this, you know.
Well, you are, because it's a human state, right?
Yes.
But you can't, like, disrespect the work.
The work.
Right? This is someone that worked don't just like steal their shit like a coyote. It's like Urban Outfitters, like stealing some artist's idea that took them like 15 years to come up with, and they just take it and benefit off it.
Right.
Right? Just, well, don't be a schmuck.
They benefit off of it until, because the problem is, like, you can benefit off of it until suddenly you're giving bad counsel to someone. And suddenly you're faced with what will happen.
Consequence.
Big time.
Yeah.
And that's always, like, whenever I hear about this stuff, I'm always thinking, like, what's your plan? Like, when I hear about people doing their own, like, whatever the particular medicine is that they're giving to people, I always think, like, wait, what's your plan when that
Your intention.
Part, But if, I mean, you know, what are you going to do when that person becomes host to an entity that
parasite?
Yeah, isn't the best thing. What are you going to do if something enters into the room that they
ditch him?
Yeah, that's it. And now you've got someone who's gone off. Now suddenly what happens is the person stops sleeping. They think that they're Jesus.
Yep.
And then they're in a mental asylum. And now the West, it's going to do their medicine. And Correct. Now you're just like injected with like whatever.
Heavy metal.
Yeah. That's
and not it. The good kind.
Not the good kind, right? And so then that person.
There's consequences when you don't have the discipline to hold the space, right? You can just jump into it, okay? You can. But like, can you just become a marathon runner?
No.
In like one day? You just can't do that. So it's just like about things that are real, you know? So if you, the thing that these people are holding is evidence that these are things that human beings have potential for or capacity for. So when you allow that capacity to come into you, but you don't have that discipline, right? But this is everyone's least favorite word.
Yes, that's right.
Who wants to do that? It takes sacrifice.
And I think the word is everyone's least favorite word because it's another word that's been like used as a bludgeon by the West.
Yeah.
So it's a term for actual punishment.
It's so good. That's true. People think it's punishment.
I disciplined my child.
Interesting.
And so when you hear it, you associate it with being punished discipline is to me, I think of it as it's the ladder that takes you over the wall that separates you from the Garden of Eden. It's a bridge. Discipline's a bridge.
Very well said.
Yeah. And that I guess you could say that, you know, the turbulence between the you that you are now and the more perfected version of you, there's some kind of, I don't know, turbulence between those two states.
Correct.
Discipline's the boat, right?
It's going to get you over.
Yeah.
It's your vehicle.
Right. It's a vehicle.
Yeah. Even if you just do yoga.
Sure.
That's good. Like, that's a thing that will get you through that.
Right.
Right? If you have, like, a practice and a discipline of any kind, like anything, but
learning music, even
music too, totally, piano. Because it builds your will.
Yeah.
So if you go into this work and you don't have a will, that's how something's going to take you over. Just like if you go get a bad boyfriend or girlfriend and you have no will, no boundaries, they're just going to like walk all over you. Like if you don't develop that, it's the same as having a bad relationship with a person.
That's so interesting. If you've ever been in a bad relationship, then you know what it's like to be possessed by a demon.
Because they possess you. You no longer have decisions, right?
Holy shit.
Who's driving your car, right? There's all those old gospel songs about don't let the devil drive.
Wow.
That's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's what happens. You lose your decision-making will.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
Holy Lord in heaven, that's spooky.
It's dangerous.
It's dangerous, but at least in a bad relationship, you've got an embodied form that you know.
You can leave.
Well, yeah, but if you suddenly become like, infested by some kind of...
It's like a horde. I call it the insect hordes. And you'll see when people are taken over, like my friend, her uncle had it, and they start to act like an insect and they make like a nest. Like they get all hoardy and they stop like cleaning. Everything gets kind of filthy.
Yeah.
They're not taking care of their body.
That's right.
You know what I mean? Like it starts to recapitulate that insect-y stuff.
That's right. This is why I make my bed. Yeah. Because in times when I have been the insect, anytime I look around, and by the way, it's sort of clean. I'm sorry. I'm looking around like, well, shit, look at my cords.
This is great.
Okay, thanks. But, you know, anytime I'm like looking around, the bed's not made, there's dishes out, I realize like, oh shit.
Be in your space.
Yeah. You got to watch
out. Be in the space.
It's one of the signs.
Because you're too in your head. A lot of like intellectual geniuses will do that stuff too, right? Where they're so not, they'll build like one part of them a lot. Because we have mind, body, and spirit. And you got to like try to juggle all of those things.
Right.
Right? To keep them in balance. Yeah. So if you get too far, I think like what a lot, the psychedelic experience and spiritual experience, when it gets too heightened, like you were talking about when they go all Messiah and stuff, now they're off balance from their other parts.
Right.
They're not in their space. They're in that other location.
Yeah. And then they also, when you add to the fact they think they're Jesus, but they've got like ashtrays all over their house filled with cigarettes. It's like, what kind of Jesus is that? You have him change your cat litter, man. Jesus would have changed.
Take care of your cat, man.
Your teacher. Tell me his name again.
Kelvin DeWolf.
How'd you find him?
Actually, magically, funnily enough, we kept running into each other, and then we found out we were both born in the same hospital in Ottawa, Canada.
Whoa.
So he's a Canadian Mi'kmaq tribe, and we literally, our kids were born within like a week of each other, the same years, like all these weird synchronicities.
Whoa.
And we went to the same acupuncture school. He has a PhD in Chinese medicine, too.
Wow.
He's really good with herbs and stuff like that as well. But so he has his native stuff, and his mom, I've met her a few times. She's one of the only people left on earth that speaks the Mi'kmaq language.
Wow.
So they're like, you know, and when he was going to high school, he said like all his friends would just commit suicide. Like there was all these suicides because Native Americans have more suicides than veterans, than like they have the highest, it's a real issue. Okay. And some people say it's because of like loss of culture or just like, you know, they have like nothing. So poor and like no prospects, or you know, drug abuse or alcoholism because of all the poverty. So he said like it was pretty common in his tribe for like high suicide rate, right?
Wow.
And that's, I think there's a couple places in America where on the Native American reservations it's the highest suicide rate in the nation is in on the reservations.
My God, that's so depressing.
It's really depressing. So, and I grew up in Ottawa and then in Montreal, so I was Canadian too, but I was like in the city. So we were both kind of having these simultaneous experiences, like we just like parallel. And then we were both at the same acupuncture school, and then I would just keep running into him. And we would start to joke after a while because like literally I would go for a hike randomly in some spot, and then I'd see him there like with his dog, and we just start laughing. It's like we can't get away from each other because we're supposed to do this work together.
Right.
You know? So you know how that is with people? I don't know. Have you had experiences like that?
Yeah.
Providence. Sure. It's providence. Like makes you come together with some people.
Yeah.
They're meant to be part of your destiny.
That's right.
Right? And that's not on accident when it happens so frequently like that. You have to be like, there's something we have to do.
I think of it as... I mean, you know, these are all lenses to look at it through.
Yeah.
But I do always refer to, Ram Dass talks about this idea of the soul pod, soul cluster. There's some sense of signing up together.
I think so, too.
Sometimes I think of it as like, you know how they would parachute people in, to, you know, and like in the wind.
Paratroopers.
Yeah, paratroopers. But the wind might blow you two apart. But it's like paratroopers with amnesia.
Yeah.
It's like you've parachuted
into a
realm. Oh,
that's good. I like that.
And you knew that you would get amnesia going in.
Yeah.
So you gave yourself in your backpack.
A way to find each other.
Yeah.
Like a little note.
Yeah, little notes. And then when you find each other, you always have this sense of like, oh, you, but you don't
it's a,
know.
It's a familiarity.
Yeah.
They look familiar.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think that's the, what Ram Dass calls the satsang, or the, that's the, you know.
Yeah.
And which is the weird predicament you can find yourself in, which is like, oh, okay, well, you're my brother, you're my sister. I don't know your name, but I've known you for a long time.
They're your kin.
Yeah.
Kinfolk, yeah. Right? That's totally real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is real.
So, I don't know why it's not everybody. Like, I get in some places, I'm like, man, it should be like all humans. It should be like down, like bros, right? But yeah. It's just, you know, we don't like each other, everybody.
Well, it's amnesia. Some people have varying levels of amnesia.
That's good.
I think. I mean, that's the other thing Ramana says is like, everyone's in the satsang, just some people don't know
we
it
just
yet.
Just don't know it.
And it's not your job to go to them like, no, you are my brother. There's no time. The way I think of it is in terms of it's like, those people, number one, it's none of your business. They're doing their
thing. True. Like, you can't be a control freak.
Right.
Yeah.
And number two, there's not time. It's like, are you going to spend all your time trying to, like, you know, get into this person?
You'll noodle out forever, like a Jerry Garcia solo.
Noodle out forever?
It'll just keep going.
That's so funny, noodling out. Oh my god!
But you know, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
You got to focus on. This is what I always say: follow the enthusiasm, right? So you know who your tight bros are,
because
you guys are gonna like have enthusiasm for each other,
right?
You're gonna feel that, like, you know, like when you go see your favorite band.
Yeah,
I mean, not always. You're gonna fight and you'll probably hate each other sometimes, like brothers and sisters or whatever. But you're going to have like a passion.
Yeah.
That you share.
Yeah.
Those are your tight bros.
Tight bros.
Yeah.
And that's just, people are always knocking on these doors and like, well, the door isn't opening. So just move on. It's like time to, don't keep knocking.
They're trying to go in. They bark up the wrong tree.
It's a waste of time.
Yeah.
But so this phenomena, to get back to your teacher, his name's Calvin DeWolf.
Yeah.
So did he name you? Or you have similar names?
No, totally not. Where my name is Daou, for people that don't know, and it's French Canadian, and they're both French Canadian names. Daou actually means of the August, which is funny. I don't have you like gotten any of the dawn stuff?
No.
Like with a lot of people that get messages or reception, there's all this stuff of the new dawn that's starting. Like if you talk to the starseed people.
Oh, that. Oh,
so
yeah.
Like the dawn, or like the golden. Yeah, so that's the AU. I call it the AU. And that's like the August one. It's this very actually profound spiritual thing that's all over. And a lot of the people in the Golden Dawn, which was that esoteric group, they all based it on that. But now all the starseed people are calling it like the dawn of consciousness, that we're having this reawakening.
Yes.
Right? So it's part of that. So my name comes from that word August, which originally is that like the golden one, or like Hathor, right?
Wow.
So that's my birth name. Everyone thinks my name is like a hippie name, you know how like the witches do or whatever.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
But it's my birth name. Yeah, my mom is a hippie, so it's her fault.
I gotcha. this dawn, this realization of this dawn. I think is another simultaneously is the best thing ever. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
When you realize that, and you realize that, oh, there's a big team.
Yes.
Working on this big. And a lot of the team isn't even on the planet. And you know, and so when you start realizing that, it's incredibly exciting. I think the problem that can happen though, there's two problems. Number one, the translation problem, which is that,
yes.
How do you go into this kingdom, having been in that kingdom, and translate the message that you've been given into a way that in this kingdom, you don't sound just
crazy?
Crazy as shit.
You sound really crazy. Yeah.
And at the very least, you could sound annoying or obnoxious.
Yes.
You know? And all of these are, I think, a problem of bad translators. It's like,
it's not going to be efficacious though, right?
No.
Like if you have these experiences and you can't share them with people, it's like for nothing. I mean, for you, like each individual that can get those realizations in them, that's like enough, right?
Great.
Like it's like chunk, right? Like what accomplishment, right?
Yeah.
But then, like, a lot of people call themselves the way showers that are having these experiences because we feel this drive to let other people know.
Yeah.
Like, even if nothing else, just that there is some larger spirit or consciousness or sentience that we can share, like a hive mind.
Yes.
That is, you. It's not like you can do stuff to see that it's true.
Yes.
It's not like made up, okay?
No.
So there's certain individuals that are sharing this synchronistically,
yes,
simultaneously. So then how do you like let someone in on the joke?
Yeah.
In a way that's going to, like you said, not run into those translation walls.
You don't want to do that because it's like, all the instincts, by the way, it's like, I feel like I'm beating up on people a little bit here, and I don't mean to. So it's like, okay, suddenly you're in the dome, so to speak. You get outside the dome for a moment. You look around. You realize, like, oh my God, it's a festival. It's happening. It's, oh my God.
Look at all these people.
It's incredible. Oh, wow. Everything's going to be fine. And then you come back here. And
Bummersville,
and that's what you think. Oh, it's Bummersville. We call it, what are they, default reality, Bummersville, whatever you want to call it. And so you're back in Bummersville, and then this is where you see a person who is drinking the juice of Bummersville, which is booze. Booze is the dew of Bummersville. Slurping the dew of Bummersville.
Yeah,
they're alcoholic. They're depressed. They're locked into their body and they're doing everything you would do if you imagined that all there was that which was within this dome.
True.
And then you come up to them and you want to tell them, hey, man, you don't understand. There's an entire legion of light that is right now working to like get through the dome. The cracks in the dome are unsealable at this point. They can't stop it. It's happening. And then the person's like, all right. Druggy, what? Go back to the. Can't take another fucking bong hit, dumbass.
Well, yeah,
I've
they think
pay bills.
Exactly.
So, how do you?
I can tell you my strategy.
Please.
My strategy is to provide an experience. I feel like you can't with words. Although sometimes, if you have like a good brain popper sentence that will like use like a Zen koan, you know,
yes,
where you can really like get them.
Yeah.
Where they go like, what? And they have a realization. So realization is a way that can be done through words, but it has to be directly about them.
Right.
You'll never be able to explain it using someone else. Mm. They have to make it about them always. Because we're us, right? You can't like do it. I get it. So it has to, that will often happen sometimes accidentally. It's hard to get people to do it on purpose.
Right.
That was part of what I tried to get in my tarot deck was the brain poppers to make people go meta.
Yes.
So you try to get their brain to open through a concept. That can work. But you can also do it through a direct experience, okay? Like, so divination is a way that people can have an impossible experience where they'll see something and they're like, that doesn't make any sense at all. Right. How could that be?
Yeah.
But so for most of the people that are so locked in, the pop out way is going to be through like a miraculous experience. Right. And so all the psychedelic people have that miraculous experience through the psychedelic.
Right.
So they can understand that part, even if they can't transcend the dome.
Right.
They get caught on that. Whoa, like this is bigger than me. The other way is they have to have an experience that is going to make them larger than themselves.
Right.
OK. They have to somehow connect through their heart, through feeling or through love, to something bigger than them. So a good way to do that actually is through suffering. So a lot of what, that gave me goosebumps. When I do healings on people, when I had like my biggest pop out, it was through my own suffering. And I was suffering so bad. And then I was like, this isn't my suffering. This is the suffering. And I was like, oh my God, humans, this is... I'm not having my suffering. I'm having the suffering. Yeah. And when I depersonalized it, I went transpersonal through suffering.
Wow.
So it was like some Jesus business.
That's so cool.
So you go big suffering or like a big feeling. Okay. So like you're feeling sad. Yeah. Just you. No, you and every other motherfucker that ever lived on the face of the earth has felt that feeling. So you kind of try to take their bad feeling and you make it bigger. Yeah. Most people try to make it smaller, make it go away. Don't do that. Make it as big as you can.
Wow.
It's like called, they call it contemptus mundi, right? So you got a hater, they hate some stuff. Make that hate so big it goes to everything. And then they're going to see past themselves and see, oh my God, look at Nietzsche hated stuff as much as I hate stuff. Wow. Now they're going to come into a relationship through their own personal suffering to something that is way larger through space-time.
Wow.
So if you can pop people open, right, to transcend that this is just happening to them.
Yeah.
Right? But it's like a trick. You got to use, like, tricks.
Tricks.
Yeah.
Yeah, tricks. This concept, tricks. The tricks.
You need tricks.
Yeah, skillful means.
You got to fool them.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. And that is my... To me, that's my favorite thing.
Because it's like comedy too, right?
It is comedy.
Correct.
And it's the because a great comedian will pop you. The
they're good poppers.
Yeah, they're great at it. Because there's such a distortion field.
They can relate.
Yeah. 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 It's amazing. You watch, just watch an interview with Chris Rock when he's, and just watch his spontaneous genius that's like completely like totally
his Damon.
Yeah, his Damon. Right. His Damon and his ability to just instantaneously distort reality in the most convincing yet sweet, hilarious way. It's incredible to watch, and just that alone, I mean, people are laughing. But in that moment, he's popping
them out.
Yeah. That's incredible.
That's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, and he uses joy. Yeah. Right, so you can use suffering, but also joy is really good.
Joy, I know this is the suffering thing. I love it though. I love the suffering thing. The particularly to imagine, for example, when the suffering is happening. One fun thing to think about is, and again, this is probably a bad translation of it all, but here's a fun thing just to imagine.
Yeah,
for fun, imagine that you were part of a legion of like glowing ships,
or yes,
like a kind of extraterrestrial, but you don't want to say it, but just light ships. And imagine that the light ships, as just a kind of eternal sort of, I don't know what they do, they surround, for lack of a better word, darkness.
Yes.
And then when they surround the darkness, they convert the darkness or alchemize or something. Something they do to the darkness makes the darkness...
Like turning up the volume on a knob.
Yeah, it's a shift. And they don't non-consensually shift the darkness. The darkness, when it comes in around it, it pops into them in their field, and then it gets shifted because that's what darkness does. It's almost like a fuel.
Yes.
So in that way, imagine.
It's the energy.
So out there, but you're basically a UFO pilot in this incredible extra dimensional ship, and one of the ways that you do this thing that you do is to come into a human body, and then the suffering that you're encountering, imagine that the suffering that you're encountering, it is the thing.
The digestion of the thing.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so now when you're approaching your own suffering, if you see it in the sense of like, oh, this is my little piece of the field to tend to.
Nom, nom, nom.
Yeah, that.
You have to eat it.
Yes, eat it. That's it.
You be a sin eater. Wow. So a lot of my services I do for people, they have suffering. So I'm like, come on, give me. What do you got? Right? Wow. That's the confession.
Yeah.
Or like that, like, what you need to eat and digest your suffering to transmute it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. And that's beautiful, man. This is Ram Dass talks about, there's ways to do this. You can eat it yourself. You can offer it to Kali.
Yes. As an offering.
Yeah. Because Ram Dass is saying, like, they eat that. So when you make the offering, they're like, yum, 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 give it to me.
Exactly.
Delicious. Thank you.
Because someone can't eat, their like stomach is having problems, probably from the alcohol or whatever, right? So they can't digest.
Right.
They're like having digestive issues.
I would be afraid if I'm afraid, I can't eat people's stuff. I can barely handle my own. I'm just working
on it.
A lot. How do you do that? How do you purify yourself?
You have to do clearing, right? So you do clearing and cleansing. So it's funny because all of the Christians, maybe not all of them, but they always diss on the witches using these familiar spirits to like work with people like this. This is what they call them, right? I did my next book that's coming out is called Familiars in Witchcraft. And it talks about how people do, like they perform as a sin eater. Okay. So when you are a sin eater, you then have to purge and cleanse yourself of it, right? Yes. So that you don't take it on yourself. And it's very simple, right? The age old technique is baptism. Okay. So the best way to clear it is like you just go under, you take a bath, like a salt water bath, like a baptism. Wow. And that's like in all the Jewish stuff, they say like you just take these like ritual baths. That's why they wash their hands too. Wow. Like every morning they wake up and they say the Mode Ani prayer and they wash their hands and they say, don't let me bring anything back from where I just was.
Wow.
Right? Which is like we were talking about, right?
What's the name of the prayer?
It's called the Mode, M-O-D-E-H, Ani, A-N-I. And they thank God for returning their soul to their body and they wash their hands three times so that nothing got brought back with them.
Wow.
But this, the washing is also like what they use for women when they have their period, because they say when women menstruate, they can take on these entities, like you have a higher risk for it because you have like an opening or whatever. Wow. It's not like anti-female. It's actually to keep out these dark entities, yeah. Right? Is where it stems from the research that I did anyway. So it's very simple. You just take like a ritual cleansing or a clearing, and you have to clear your mind too. So everyone holds stuff. So this is, people don't know what sin is. Okay, are you guys ready?
Yes.
Everybody thinks sin is a bad action. Like they say sin is cheating on your wife. Yeah. That's not what sin is. Sin is the hate that will give your wife for you.
Whoa.
Not the action of cheating on your wife. Sin is the hateful, grosso, negative energy you're going to give to your wife.
Wow.
As a result of that action.
Yeah.
Sin is what we give each other through being jerks to each other. They say don't steal from each other, not because stealing's bad, but because of the hate it causes in each other.
Yeah.
Sin is a hidden bad feeling that we keep inside ourself for our kin.
Whoa.
This is what the story of Cain and Abel is, okay?
Right.
So Cain has all these bad feelings about his brother because he like was jealous and he keeps it to himself.
Right.
That's my bad feeling and now I'm going to get you.
Yeah.
That's sin. Not the actual action of killing his brother, wow. Which a lot of people are going to freak out about, right?
Yeah, sure.
But then God forgives Cain. He says, no, you can live forever. It's cool. I don't care. Like, just don't be a jerk, right?
Yeah.
So, but it's that the sin that people are carrying. So when I provide a service, you can't really like heal any action that has happened. But what you can heal is that hate and bad feeling that people get inside them.
Whoa.
That's what they need to digest.
Yeah.
Is that. Sure. That's what sin is.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Right?
Yeah.
No one knows that. So they hold these grudges or bad feelings or like you just hate someone because they did something really bad. This is why it's so bad. Like all the victimization now, it's just people hate each other and just justifiably so, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's just doing things that wreck a person.
Yeah.
Like, there's no justice for it. Now they got sin.
Yeah.
They hate you now.
Yeah.
How can you not? Wow. Now you got to clear all that out.
Holy shit, that's so cool.
Right? We really have to clear out all those bad feelings and then figure out a way to deal with the problem so that we stop giving each other hate all the time.
Right. Yeah. That, you know, I was just listening to that Beatles song, Carry That Weight, you know?
It's the burden of contempt. The way they showed me was you care, like the cross on your back. Yeah. It's the contempt.
Yeah.
Contempt is the thing.
It's so heavy. When you have it, it's so heavy.
It is.
And you're carrying this around with you. And it's like, you know, the issue of forgiveness,
mm-hmm.
you know, is like, you know, people think this forgiving means
making it okay that they did that.
Whereas like, I guess from this POV, forgiveness would be relieving yourself of the sin.
Like taking contempt. A poop.
Wow.
It's a elimination system that we have forgotten how to use.
And it's held in the body, isn't it? It's in you.
It is.
And it eats you up.
It does. It's like a darkness in your belly.
Oh, yeah.
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 But people get it. It's not their fault. It's usually justified because someone really messed them up through maybe even violence or trauma or like generationally, like black people, like Jesus, right? Like how...
Yeah.
How can you, I don't even know how they live in America. Like, how do you, right? Like, so much gnarly.
So much.
Too much gnarly for people to bear. Yeah. That burden of contempt is too much for them to even lay down by the riverside.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you can't, it's so big.
I know.
A lot of contempt.
I know. And it's in that one in particular, it's like this thing where like some people I think find it like annoying when people start talking about reparations, or as though like, come on, really? You're going to bring that up? It was not that long
ago. If I kicked them in the shin, they would hate me for the rest of their life. Right? They couldn't do it. They couldn't carry that contempt.
Yeah.
That they're asking the other person to carry.
Yeah.
We all got to help each other carry that load.
Yeah.
Because you have to see they are righteous in their contempt, and we have to help each other through the sin burden.
Oh my God. Helping each other through the sin burden. That's the mission. It's like,
true.
This is heaviness that's just, you know, it's being, if we go back to the idea of the sort of, I don't know, the tunnel of selves that we were talking
about.
With
Ram Dass, yeah.
The initially talking about the frames of existence.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
A lot of time that. And then we realized like, oh, okay, we're kind of like, we're a human, but we're also a tunnel.
Yes.
And then we realized that these tunnels have created a kind of, I guess you could say, circulatory system that transcends space and time, and that dripping out of some of these tunnels is contempt. This is the transmission of... this is the transmission of trauma generationally.
Yes.
And so now when you realize some people yourself and the sin you carry within, when you realize that you're kind of like a pipeline opening up into this time space and then pouring that contempt into this time space, you realize, oh shit, man, it's pretty important for me to get my pipes cleaned, you know? Cause
that's exactly what it is.
Yeah. And that's the job. It's the more that we can like begin to like do this thing that you're talking
about.
Gotta
eat it.
Then the more what starts coming out of these pipes is the dawn, right? That would be
correct.
The idea, the dawn you're talking about,
yep.
The new thing starts
that's
coming out.
Really, I think what's happening.
Wow.
Yeah. To try to clear it. And what we have is you can see the resistance to it with everyone. All the corruption is rising up to the surface, right? Like earthworms at an earthquake.
Yeah.
Right. So it's all coming up in order to get rectification and reparation. Right.
Wow.
So these people that are scoffing at the rectification, like that is exactly what we have to do. There's no other choice. Right. Like
right. We
have to get on it. We got to get on it now.
We got to pay our tab.
We got to pay.
Yeah. And then once you pay the tax and paying the
tax, it's settled.
Yeah. Yeah.
Forgiveness, right? You settle the issue.
Yeah.
There's no, you can't avoid settling.
No. Gotta settle the tab.
Yeah.
This is a good way to look. I mean, to pull it out of like a big perspective back to the self, you know, like when you do run into a place where you're paying a tab, which everyone, I think if you're incarnated as a human being, you've got some kind of,
yeah,
you've got a bill to pay.
Consequence.
There's something you got to pay for, man. I mean, just the fact that like, you know, my wife, she's pregnant. I look at the amount of suffering a woman goes through, to make a human. And then you realize any human walking around, at least one tab you've got to pay is the suffering of your mother that she went through to make you exist.
Well, there's ways out though. Do you know the way out? This is what my teacher says. That's all karma. So what you're talking about is karma.
Yes.
Those are real, like a physical law.
Yeah.
But there's also dharma. So dharma is a thing that rectifies everything in a spontaneous, it's like a, I call it gamma because it's like a, like if you were to look at everything's all messed up, it's like if Mary Poppins came in and just the whole room got cleaned.
Yes.
Right? So there is also dharma. But dharma happens through not forgiveness, but through mercy.
Oh.
So there's, I get goosebumps when I think of this, but there is a higher force. Just like there's these like dark forces, there's this higher force that is mercy, that is real.
Wow.
Right? That can like, you have all your cards, like you're saying, like there's all these things you got to reckon.
Yeah.
It's like reckoning.
Yeah.
But then there's also this like, thing that can just be like, oh my God, it's spring. Hooray.
Yeah.
All the problems I had in winter are gone.
I love that.
Like just gone.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You, that's like the new dawn is when you have that like, oh my God, everything is relieved.
Wow.
It's like a relief.
Wow.
And that's like a force that's bigger. I would kind of call that like Holy Spirit or Providence or something,
grace?
You know? Grace. It's like grace.
This is a good final question.
Yeah.
How do you deal with the problem of encountering that grace and feeling like you don't deserve it?
Oh, that brings you to humility, right? Because when I felt it, I was like, oh my God, this is, you like, you go on your knees and you're crying because you're like, how could this be? And it's true. You feel like you don't deserve it, but then it's there nonetheless. And it's like this rainbow that's just like for you, you know? Mm. And it brings you humility to know that even at your worst, no matter the worst thing you've done, which is really hard for victims to hear because they want the punishment.
Yes.
No matter what, like if someone did something wrong, they deserve the punishment.
Yeah.
Because the fact that everyone deserves that grace is hard.
Yes.
To reckon.
That's right.
But it doesn't make it any less true.
Maja. Thank you. Thank you. What a joy.
That was so, I'm filled with the joy.
Yeah.
The joy.
Please tell them how to find you.
Oh, yeah. I have, my website is witchofthedawn.com. So my email is maja@godismyboyfriend.com. And I usually post like most of the stuff that I do with either myself or my teacher on social networking, of course. So I'm pretty easy to find.
When does your book come out?
It's going to be out, I think, October 26th.
Okay.
So around Halloween, real spooky.
Beautiful. We'll keep our eyes out for it. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Duncan. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, everybody. That was Maja.u. All the links to find Maja will be at duncantrussell.com. Much thanks to Simple Contacts for supporting this episode of the DTFH. If you enjoy the Duncan Trussell Family Hour, why not subscribe? Leave a nice rating. Leave yourself a nice rating in the great comment section of Time. Take a shower ritualistically. I actually tried that and it's pretty cool. I love you guys. Until next time, Hare Krishna.